Welcome back. You've got a cluster with node pools ready to go. Today we put software on it. And here's the encouraging part. About 90% of the daily work comes down to just three objects. Pods, which run your containers. Deployments, which keep those containers running and update them safely. And services, which give them a stable address. Master this trio and you can operate almost any application. Let's walk through them. Start with the pod. A pod is the smallest thing you can deploy in Kubernetes. It's one or more containers that share a network identity and storage, an application-specific logical host. Containers inside the same pod share one IP address and can talk to each other over localhost. Most of the time a pod holds a single container, but sometimes it holds a main container plus a helper. Now the single most important operational fact about pods. Pods are disposable. A pod is not a durable thing you nurse back to health. It stays on its node until it finishes, or you delete it, or it gets evicted because the node ran low on resources, or the node itself fails. And critically, a pod never moves itself to another node. If the node dies, that pod is just gone. The way I say it is, pods are cattle, not pets. You don't nurse a sick pod. Something replaces it. The something is a controller, and that's exactly why you almost never create a raw pod by hand. Instead, you use a workload controller that creates pods from a template and heals them automatically. For a stateless application, like a web frontend or an API, you use a deployment, and that's your default choice. For stateful applications that need stable identity and storage, like databases, you use a stateful set. For something that must run one copy on every node, like a logging agent, you use a daemon set. And for run to completion or scheduled tasks, you use a job or a cron job. While we're on pods, let me mention two features that make them reliable. The first is probes. The kubelet, that node agent from episode 1, can run three kinds of health checks on your container. A liveness probe answers the question, is this container still alive? If it fails, the kubelet kills and restarts the container. A readiness probe answers, is this container ready to receive traffic? If it fails, Kubernetes removes the pod from the service but does not restart it. And a startup probe answers, has a slow application finished booting? While it's still starting, the other probes hold off. The key insight is that readiness is not the same as liveness. A pod can be alive but not yet ready, for example while it warms a cache. Getting these probes right is what makes updates seamless. Now let's talk deployments, which are the workhorse. A deployment provides declarative updates. You describe the desired state, how many replicas and which image, and the deployment controller drives the actual state to match, at a controlled rate. There's an ownership chain worth picturing. A deployment owns a replica set. A replica set keeps a fixed number of identical pods running, and the pods are the leaves. When you change the pod template, for example by updating the container image, the deployment creates a brand new replica set and gradually shifts pods from the old one to the new one. That gradual shift is a rolling update. Three fields in a deployment matter most. Replicas, which is how many pods you want. The selector, which is how the deployment knows which pods it owns, and that selector is immutable after creation. And the template, which is the blueprint for each pod. The selector must match the template's labels, or the API rejects it. Let me linger on rolling updates because it's the everyday superpower. A rollout is triggered only when the pod template changes, such as a new image. Just scaling the replica count does not trigger a rollout. During the update, the controller spins up the new replica set while scaling down the old one, replacing pods gradually. Two knobs control the pace, and both default to 25%. Max unavailable is how many pods may be down during the update. Max surge is how many extra pods may be created above your desired count. My mental picture is, surge is the spare tires you add, and unavailable is the seats you're allowed to empty. The counterpart to rolling forward is rolling back, and this is a lifesaver. A deployment keeps a history of its revisions, 10 by default. If a rollout goes bad, say a crash looping image or a typo in the tag, you can undo it with a single command that returns you to the previous revision, or you can target a specific older revision. One caution though, a rollback only reverts the pod template, not the replica count. And a rollout can get stuck on things like an image that can't be pulled, a failing readiness probe, or a quota limit. So it's wise to set a progress deadline, which makes Kubernetes report that the rollout has stalled, instead of hanging silently. Now the third object, the service, and here's the problem it solves. Because pods are disposable, their IP addresses come and go. A client cannot just target a pod directly. A service gives you a stable virtual IP and a stable DNS name in front of a set of pods that it selects by their labels. As pods appear and disappear, the service keeps its list of backends in sync automatically. There are four service types, and the way to choose is to ask, who needs to reach this? The default type is cluster IP, which is reachable only from inside the cluster. You use it for service-to-service traffic, like one microservice calling another. Next is node port, which exposes the service on a high-numbered port on every node's IP, and it's mainly for development and as a building block. Then there's load balancer, which gives you an external IP through the cloud's load balancer. On AKS that provisions an Azure load balancer automatically, and that's how a public web app gets a browsable address. And finally, external name, which just returns a DNS alias, a CNAME record, pointing at some external host, with no proxying at all. You'd use that to point an in-cluster name at an external database. And how does one pod find another? Through DNS. With cluster DNS running, which it always is on AKS, any pod can reach a service by name. The full form is service name dot namespace dot svc dot cluster dot local. And within the same namespace, you can just use the service name. So one service calling another over its plain name simply works, with no hard-coded IP addresses anywhere. Finally, a word on your daily rhythm with the command line tool. You'll live in a handful of verbs, apply, to create, or update, from a manifest file. Get, to list things, and see which node they're on. Describe, to see the events that explain why a pod is stuck or crash looping. Logs, to read a container's output, and you can follow them live. And exec, to open a shell inside a running container. I remember them as AGDLE, apply, get, describe, logs, exec. Those five verbs solve most day-to-day problems. Let me summarize. Pods are disposable, so you manage them through controllers, and a deployment is your default for stateless apps. A deployment owns a replica set, which owns pods, and changing the pod template creates a new replica set, which is a rolling update. Rolling updates are governed by max surge and max unavailable, and you undo a bad one with a rollback. Probes make apps self-healing, with liveness to restart, readiness to gate traffic, and startup for slow boots. A service gives pods a stable IP and DNS name, and you pick cluster IP for internal, node port, or load balancer for external, or external name for an alias. And service discovery is just DNS. Quick self-checks. A node dies. Does the pod move itself? No. A controller creates a replacement elsewhere. What triggers a deployment rollout? A change to the pod template, not scaling. Which probe removes a pod from service without killing it? The readiness probe. And the default service type, reachable only from inside the cluster, cluster IP. Your app now runs and is reachable. But it still has its configuration baked into the image, and no guardrails on how much CPU and memory it can consume. In the next episode, we fix both, with config maps and secrets to externalize configuration, and resource requests and limits to control scheduling, quality of service and cost. Talk soon.